Ryan Rashaga walks in, sporting a Strudwick type T-shirt, few sizes too small. What's happening?
It's not that small, is it?
Well, it's a little tight.
That's the way Lululemon makes them, I guess.
Yeah,
Right?
No. Like when you could
Strud
see
would
the
know
when you
that.
could see the chest hair form into your shirt, like that's a little, it's a little tight.
I guess I should probably,
Yeah.
should have changed this one before I went out in public. This is my cutting the grass shirt.
Oh, cutting the grass before the showers come.
Yeah, exactly. Got to get
Nice.
her done.
I want to, lots of Oilers and Eskimo stuff we'll get to, but
Sure.
I want to read this quickly coming in from Tim. Hey, Gregor, how come you haven't spoke about Steve Ott? I know he's one of your best interviews on the show. I'm stunned he's not being picked up yet. I know he might not want to play in Canada, but it'd be a great fit in our bottom six. We already overpaid on two contracts, Nikita Puliot, so what is one more? He does everything. Add grits, gets under your skin, good vet in the room. Thoughts on Ott? Great show. Tim, well, I can say this, Tim. I don't think Steve Ott is opposed to playing in Canada, so I'll start that out.
Okay.
He's a guy who's not shy of the media. That doesn't bother him. He'd be one of the few guys that wouldn't get rattled by it by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not sure I see Ott as a center, though. I think he's more of a winger.
Well, he did play a reasonable amount of center, though, didn't he?
He has played both,
Previously, yeah, he can
but
play
like
both. And
a lot of times in Dallas, like when they were going to the Cups, he was a winger.
yeah, and that's probably where he's played his best hockey. He can play center. If you're looking at Steve Ott, you're not looking at a solution that's going to play second line center role. I mean, you're basically bringing in a number three center, and in the next few years, probably a number four center. So he's definitely an option. There's a couple of options for that second line center position, and I think the Oilers are probably. I don't have information for sure on who they are or aren't looking at this second, but you run down the list, right? I mean, David Legwand is the obvious one. Derek Roy is still out there. You talked about Steve Ott still being out there. He's more of a three to me. There's a few guys out there, but like we talked a little bit about yesterday, you could also see them trying to address that need through a trade of some sort. But I think what they're doing right now is they're kind of letting the leaves settle a little bit and trying to figure out who maybe shakes loose from all the wheeling and dealing a couple of days ago. And if all of a sudden, well, now this team's in this position and they have to do this, takes a couple of days for all of that dust to kind of settle, and I think that's what they're doing right
Yeah.
now.
Ott was really good, though, in St. Louis as a centerman,
Yep.
definitely in the faceoff circle,
Yeah.
almost 60%. So I like Steve Ott a lot, and I would definitely take him.
Well, he's hard to play
Yeah,
against. Like, he makes life miserable
Steve
for
Ott
people who
is
play
a
him.
good third-line guy,
Yeah,
right? And so,
exactly.
but Edmonton right now, I still think they need two, but they probably need more of a second line because if you had to hide Archibald or Draisaitl, you'd rather do it as a third-line guy, not a second-line guy.
Do you think they're keeping the kid? I think they're keeping the kid.
I got that impression. Now, things I and here's my one issue. If you're billing your team in June thinking he's an automatic, that's a problem. I would build my team to say, you know what? If Leon Draisaitl makes it in October, then guess what? We have too many good centermen. Oh well, rather than say we're going to go into training camp knowing that Draisaitl and Nugent Hopkins are both our top three centers.
Yeah,
I think to
see.
me that's a big concern. Like, why not have more rather than less?
But what they've done is it's not like they've gone out and gotten guys who clearly should be in that spot ahead of them. They went out and signed a couple of their own guys who, if they have to, they could shuffle around a little bit and have them play there. But did you not find it interesting that they gave both Lander and Arcabello deals? Because those are the guys who, if Draisaitl isn't ready, they kind of mishmash them around the lineup and make something that works. But it's not like they went out and got a true NHL proven centerman and said, okay, kid, you're going to have to beat this guy for minutes. They've got options if he doesn't pan out, but they're mediocre options in Lander and Arcabello.
Yeah, but options that I'm not overly enamored by.
Yeah, that's what I'm
See, that's
saying.
what I'm saying. Like, to me, it's so you don't have Leon Draisaitl as a number three overall pick. Great. You got Mark Arcabello, who I know everybody, got a chubby over because he had 10 really good games to start his NHL career. But and I understand that he's more aggressive than the other small forwards. That's not a reason to keep him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you don't have an aggressive group of forwards, so being the most aggressive guy on that group, I'm not sure if that's a, it's a great statement. It's no different than the people that say, well, Jeff Petrie is the Oilers' best defenseman. Yeah, great. They gave up the most goals in the NHL. If you're the best of a worse lot, how good are you?
Yeah.
Like, I don't really know. And I'm one who's – I'm not on the bandwagon to trade Jeff Petrie. I'm also not one who thinks that this guy is a lock, guaranteed, proven top four defenseman. He's a proven top four defenseman on the worst team in the NHL. There's a big difference from that than being a top four defenseman on a top playoff team.
Yeah, well, he was a top – really a top two defenseman on the worst team in the league. I mean, he should be playing right comfortable in that four slot.
Yeah.
That's where he should be. You know?
Sure. But even then – how good would he be on a good team? Yeah. I don't know. I'd have to see. Like, somebody's going to have decent stats on your possession team when you're getting that much ice time just because you're going to get played ice with Taylor Hall, right?
Yeah.
And now I know that this year his numbers weren't only his Corsi number if you look at it, but I don't have an issue with Hall's game whatsoever. But and Jeff Petrie, I'd rather have depth, and I understand why you keep him. But, you know, I've seen people suggest that, you know, they should lock him up for 5 years at $5 million. I'm like, why? I haven't not seen anything to say five-year deal. Nothing in my eyes locks him as a five-year deal.
I still feel like there's a fairly steep incline for Justin Schultz's game in terms of his development. I feel like there's a pretty steady incline that's going to happen the next couple of years. There's some upside there. I don't know how much better Jeff Petrie is going to get than he is kind of right now. I'm not sure. I think if he's put into a role that fits him better, he might be more effective. But I don't know how much better he's going to get in the next couple of years. He's a few years older, and I'm not certain of that yet. Whereas I see Schultz with some significant more upside.
Well, the one thing Schultz has is you expect, you know what, his instincts in the offensive zone are very, very good.
Yep.
So when you have one thing you excel at, then you can build on that. When you look at Jeff Petrie's game, what is, like, Mark Fain comes in, he excels at being a very good defensive defenseman.
Yep.
No one expects him to be offensive. You know that's all he brings.
Yep.
In Jeff Petrie's case, you're like, yeah, he skates well. Jeff Petrie has all the things that make him look like he should be a very good player. I haven't seen it on a consistent enough basis, in my opinion. And I'm not one who's saying, hey, trade him. But if you can get a proven second-line center, of course you'd make that trade. But I don't think you can. That's why the Oilers can only trade Jeff Petrie, in my eyes, if they get a legitimate NHL player. Jeff Petrie, even if at the worst he's the number six, he's a legitimate NHL player.
Oh, yeah.
There's no argument in my mind that he will play another 8 years in the NHL. I don't debate that. No way. I don't care what number you want to put him at. I don't ever see him as a number one or two, but maybe he peaks at a three, fine. But he's a three to a six, depending on your team, and that's fine, and he can play for 8 years. The Oilers have to end the cycle of getting rid of proven NHL players for prospects and hope and nothing ultimately in return.
The other thing, too, if you think about the role that they've given Jeff Petrie, I mean, how long now has he been the guy who is supposed to be the stabilizing guy on the pairing or the more veteran guy on the pairing or the, like, how
That's unfortunate because he wasn't old enough to do it.
Exactly. How good would Jeff Petrie be if he'd have played with a 31-year-old, you know, 10-year veteran shutdown guy that could just take care of their own zone? If he didn't have to be the guy on the pairing who is the veteran, responsible veteran. You know, he's been very miscast in his time here in Edmonton. And the deficiencies in his game, because of the way this defense was built, were so glaring and so frustrating for the fan base to watch, right? You want this guy who's 6'3" and a couple hundred pounds to be running some people over and, you know, pushing and shoving and getting a little bit, you know, getting his hands dirty a little bit. Because of the way this blue line was built, it just accentuated the deficiencies in his game. He needs to be in a situation where the positive parts of his game are what the focus is on, and there are other guys who can do the rest. And he hasn't really had that luxury in the time that he's been here. He needs to be able to just... Jeff Petrie is nothing other than a very good puck-moving defenseman who can maybe be on your second-unit power play if he has to be, but he's a decent first-pass puck-moving defenseman. Not fantastic defensively, not fantastic offensively. He's kind of middle of the way, both zones, but there's room in the NHL and on most teams for that guy.
Rashog and Gregor live at Assured Buick GMC. What are you hearing on David Legwin?
Well, I think the ask is four and a half over four. And I think that's kind of the ballpark that camp wants to land in.
Yeah, I don't think they're good. I think that number drops with every passing.
Well, they kind of missed the dance, right? I mean, they're showing up 3 hours into the dance looking to bring the pretty girl home, and it's like, dude, they're all gone. Like, where were you when where were you when all the Timberlake music was playing? Like, the dance is kind of over. So they're in a little bit of a tough spot because they're, how often 4 or 5 days into free agency does the huge money get thrown around still? It's in the first day, the mayhem. And I'm not sure if he just doesn't like what's left for options and is waiting for other ones to pop up. But I don't have any confirmation from the Oilers or even from David Legwand's side of things, but you'd have to think the Oilers would be kicking some tires on that guy, wouldn't you?
Well, you'd hope so.
I think he would fit. Like a now, fit. I understand. Now, maybe they have, right? They've been – when all of my intel in regards to David Legwand has been very quiet. So that always leads me to believe, okay, well, maybe there is something – going on. But
there's people in the organization that like the player, like the game. He's been around. To me, he's kind of exactly what they need. A guy that can play the number two role if he has to, but will very effectively slide into the number three role in the next 2 or 3 years. So if I were the Oilers, as long as the money isn't ridiculous, I'd do 3 years with David Legwand because he'll be your number two for the next year and a half or so. And then maybe slide back to that three spot for the last year and a half of his deal. And then you make a decision on that afterwards. And that does nothing but insulate Draisaitl with a good veteran NHL center who, when he's having tough times, can just slide right in there and no problem at all. Makes total sense to me. If I were the Oilers, I would certainly look at between three and a half and $4 million over 3 years and see if he can't get something done.
And now, David Legwand, I guess it comes down to obviously supply and demand and how many teams are interested. A lot of those veteran guys, some of them, they really want to go to a place they can win.
Yep.
And he might take a one-year deal just on the chance of playing a competitive team.
But, I mean, for teams that have a chance to win right now.
Yeah, they don't really need.
Like Chicago addressed their need, right?
Yeah.
Other teams that were desperate for centers, like the Dallas Stars, addressed their need.
Yeah.
Anaheim addressed their need.
The teams
the
right
Kings
now
don't need one.
That I know that are interested in him are basically in the same boat as the Oilers, non-playoff teams. Buffalo, Toronto, like Ottawa desperately needs a center.
Yeah.
Desperately. Edmonton.
So of all those teams you just mentioned,
yeah,
where would you go thinking, I wonder if I have a chance to at least – make the playoffs in the next 2 or 3 years. Who knows what the Ottawa Senators are going to look
like. The advantage
of
the East, only because I don't think it's a conference nearly as tough as the West, but I don't see Buffalo. I don't see Ottawa. Toronto probably is the closest of the four, but that's only because of the conference they're in. I still, you know, Toronto hasn't added a whole bunch at all. Yeah. I didn't think they were that good last year. So none of those teams have a great chance of doing it right now, but if it's a three-year deal, you would think in 3 years – maybe.
Yeah.
It would be here by a slim margin.
How much better do you think the Oilers are right now than they were 3 weeks ago? Like I think it's fairly significant from a depth standpoint, from a positional standpoint.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty significant. Like their blue line to me right now is significantly better than at any point what they had last season.
Yes, I would firm believer on that. Yes, I would agree. Now, saying that their defense is vastly improved still doesn't give them a great defense because they have the worst defense in the league. But I would agree with you that they've improved a lot there. And a lot of it really, when it's said and done, you look at the free agents of the Oilers. This team is only going to go as far as their young guys take them. These guys in Pouliot and Purcell and Fain. And I think Fain maybe will be the most important of all of the free agent signings thus far just because a guy who can shut down and be good in his own zone. They desperately need a guy like that and who clearly understands it. When I had him on the show, man, I can't remember the last time I talked to a player who was that excited about playing defense in his zone. I'm more comfortable starting my own zone. I don't even want to play in the offensive zone is basically what he said. So it will help them. You know, Pouliot and Purcell are obviously upgrades over Joensuu and other guys of that point right now. But ultimately, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has to have a huge bounce-back season, right? Nail Yakupov has to be a lot better, and he changed his number to 10, so maybe that will help him. Taylor Hall has to continue to do what he's doing offensively and become a better two-way player, which I thought he showed a lot of strides in the last half of the season. He was much better on back pressure and stuff like that.
He started skating 6 weeks earlier this year than he has any other year. He's on it big time already.
So I think those are the guys that will be the ultimate leaders for the team, but their depth or complementary players are way better, yes.
Yeah. No, for sure. And that's really when you get into it, you go on a four-game road trip through some of those tough cities, and that's where Hall and Nugent Hopkins and Everly and those guys, they're only going to be able to do so much. They need veteran NHL players who aren't – like, these guys are legit top-nine players in the NHL. Purcell is a legit top-nine player in the NHL, right? Pouliot has become a legit top-nine player. These guys aren't fringe guys like Joensuu and Hendricks. These guys belong in NHL lineups on NHL third lines. And that's – to go into battle with guys in the right spots makes such a huge difference. So – you're right. Their fortunes hang squarely on what their young stars can do, but they've got a much better supporting cast from day one. And I like the contract they gave Gazdik. I like I like the way their third line, their bottom line is shaping up. So it's everybody around them is getting better. They've gotten better as well, but it's going to be a tall order for them. But I mean, just alone, Fane, Nikitin, and Keith Ali instead of Nurse, Marinson, and Klefbom. It's just a good idea to do what they've done here.
Well, what about Larson, Grebishkov, Beloff? That to me is where the big improvement is. Nick fired in, hey, Jason, what about a one-year deal, overpay Leguan, and then you can trade him at the deadline if the Oilers are out of contention?
Yeah, well, getting a guy to move his wife and kids and family and everybody on a one-year deal to a team that's not really contending – that good luck. I don't know what that overpayment looks like, but it'll probably be $5 million plus. So good idea in principle. I don't know that David Leguand is that guy to do that deal.
Okay.
I mean, I'm told he wants 4 years. So
yeah, some guys do want stability at the later stage because you're right. You get your kids in school and different things. You don't want to be moving all over.
Yeah.
So
I mean, think about it. If you had a son or a daughter that was in grade six, well, the next 4 years.
Hey, I'm just trying to get him out of 7 months. Okay,
yeah.
Let's not go that
there
fast.
You go.
But I can understand that. If he's crawling, that'll be a big thing. I'll be rattled then, because now I can just sit him in one spot and I know where he is.
How's the hair? The hair's come in?
I had a ton of hair when I was a kid. So, but they say that supposedly hair's from your mother's side. If that's the case, he'll be pretty happy.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But you know what? When you look this good, you don't need hair. So he'll probably want to shave his head when he's two.
Do they make glasses for youths like that?
He's got a pair of shades already.
Does he?
Oh, hey, my chopper, my eye doctor buddy, that's what he bought us as a baby gift. Says it's most kids' damage in their eyes happen in the first 2 years.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't know. This is what my eye doctor tells me, and he kind of knows what he's talking about. So
I had no idea.
Yeah, so he's got some cool cool kid shades. Yeah, we got to put a strap on because otherwise he tries to take them off. So.
Yeah. I give him 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. He'll be gone.
Oh, well, it's not like he wears them around the house. It's not out very often, but. When he goes out, he's looking cool.
Once they get mobile, it's impossible to hang on to anything. Everything gets lost. We're just always looking for stuff when you got babies.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm not too worried about that. It's mom's job.
How about this radio we're doing right now, hey?
Yeah, let's get off of that. One quick one for you. I know you're going on holiday soon, or you're already obviously in holiday mode based on your attire.
Are you seriously going to talk to me like that? I'm staring at you.
Yeah, what are you talking about? There's a designer shirt and shorts.
That's a designer shirt.
You have a big stain on the front of your t-shirt.
I was doing the grass.
But anyway, Edmonton Eskimos, quickly. Only one game. Yep. Obviously, they'll be better because they were pretty bad last year. How good can this team turn around in 1 year, do you think, realistically?
Well, I mean... it's the CFL. I think you can turn things around pretty quickly. I think that enough changes when you flip over a coaching staff. I mean, there's a lot of change that happens. New systems and new faces, new messages, the whole bit. They've added some good players. Mike Riley is another year in and obviously willing to keep himself healthy by judging by the way he was sliding the other day. So I think that the Eskimos absolutely could push for the playoffs, and you never know what happens when you get in. You win a game or two, so... It's the CFL, man. It can turn around quickly in the CFL as far as I'm concerned. I'm not going to start planning the parade or anything like that. But, I mean, I got a note from Farhan during the game last week, and he said, man, this team is way better.
Oh, well,
and,
yeah.
Like, he said just watching them up close, the way they're doing things, he said it's night and day.
They're X and O's.
Yeah.
Their attention to detail, like their practices. I wish you could have a video to show
the different, and I'm a firm believer in practice is how you play at this level. I've seen so many NHL teams come here through the years and watch their practice compared to the Oilers, and many times it wasn't comparable.
Yeah.
You've seen the same thing.
For sure.
The Eskimo practices, like today was the day before the game in football. So for people who don't know, they never practice on the day of the game. They don't have a morning skate or morning runaround. And really, the day before in football is usually there's no pads on. They just got shorts. It's kind of a walkthrough. Well, Chris Jones, it is way more intense. Yeah. It's an hour and 50 minutes, and guys are always going. When the last few years on hat day, as you call it, they would have guys stand on the sideline, twiddling their thumbs, watching guys do mock kickoffs for 10 minutes in a row.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. It's a total change in how they do things. Now that they've obviously there's still some areas of weakness. It's not going to turn over one day, but I'm just saying their attention to detail from all of their coaches, top to bottom,
yeah,
is,
and you
is
can
much,
tell.
Much more intense than
I
last
agree
year.
With you. You can tell by why. I was down there a couple of weeks ago, and Mike, we were waiting to do the media on the field afterwards, and Mike Riley came over, and granted, this is when a few guys were sick, and I think he had a little bit of a cold or something, a little bit of a bug. But I interviewed a couple of guys, and I'm looking around for Riley, and he was, like, crashed on the side of the field, half asleep, like, exhausted. I think it was on their last day of training camp. Like, they were exhausted. They were run hard. They crammed a lot in, but it's intense. Everybody said that was the most intense training camp they'd been part of in their time in the CFL. And that sets the tone real early for an organization that can't afford to be complacent at all. So a good start for them. They got a nice, soft opponent coming up here and a good chance for them to get off to a 2-0 start.
Shauger, get back to Lawn Moyne, and we will chat with you tomorrow.
Okay, buddy. Sounds good.